Evening, folks. Welcome to the Trinity Tims podcast. I'm your host tonight. My name is Joe McHugh from Video Celts. Alongside me, as usual, I've got Eric from Reed Celtic, and also I've got James from the Celtic blog. So it's been quite an eventful couple of days, an eventful week. But just to give you a little bit of background, all three of us are very independent. None of us are on the Celtic fan media loop. None of us get an invite once a month to ask one question a month and then toddle off, patting yourselves in the back, thinking that we're Celtic media guys. So that's a little bit of background from us. We say what we like, we do what we like, we type what we like, we produce what we like. So we're not looking for any favours from anyone. The pod has been building up nicely alongside our free website. So you'll find fairly different comment and content on our websites, but mostly we're in agreement with most areas. So there's been lots happening recently in Celtic. Unfortunately, I've got an urgent phone call, so I'll just pass over to James to look after things for the next 10, 15, 20 minutes. Cheers.
I would imagine we're going to talk about the cup final, Eric. I would imagine that's the subject matter that we got to open with. And you know what? Joe's right, we are all independent here, and that means that we can't always reconcile our time schedules. The reason that we are doing this as late in the week as we are has got nothing to do with hiding. It's got nothing to do with anybody not wanting to face gloating Ibrox fans. Because let's be honest, what do they have to gloat about? They had a dreadful season, a dreadful, shocking, catastrophic, club-rocking, game-changing season. And right now, as it stands, they don't have a board of directors. They don't have a manager. And the four guys that the press has named as being linked to the job, one of them prefers to sit on a beach. Another has never been more than 50 feet away from Daddy. Wherever Daddy has gone, he's carried his books and his clipboards. Another one has set a land speed sacking record at two clubs. And the final one, if they appoint him, will have to be plucked out of the clutches of his talks with Leicester City. So I'm not really sure what they think they're laughing at. The reason we're doing this late is because we couldn't reconcile our schedules, and that's because of me. Because I had plans after the cup final, and those plans were not going to change just because a few Ibrox fans on social media were going to stamp their feet and say that we were in hiding. No one here is in hiding. Why should we be? The cup final performance was awful. It was dreadful. We didn't deserve to win, bottom line. We barely showed up. The tactics were as they've been since the start of the season. Rodgers has came out in the aftermath of the game and said that there have been times when we have gone up against 5-3-2 formations, and he's right. He's 100% right. The common denominator is that we've gone up against those formations with the same system, the same style, each and every time, and it was always going to catch us on one of the big occasions that mattered, and here we are. I've been getting a bit of stick for my contention that although we didn't win it, Aberdeen certainly didn't deserve the praise they got for winning it, and I'm sticking to my guns on that because they don't. Their manager was 6 minutes away from being condemned as a guy whose defensive performance is one of the worst examples of cynical trying for penalties football that we've seen in the history of the Scottish Cup. And had we got the victory due to our own goal, he would have had serious questions to answer about why, even on a day when we weren't completely on our game, they didn't even try a leg. So I really don't want to hear how they deserved it and how it was some great tactical plan. I don't grudge them winning it, by the way. I don't grudge any team winning a competition. But to shower praise on the guy and shower praise on such cynical negative tactics, I think, is it's much of what's wrong with Scottish football right there. That the Scottish media would pretend that that represents some superb tactical victory. That tactical victory, by the way, was almost undone right at the end. If Daizen Maeda has a little bit more composure, even a second's more composure, the whole conversation during the game is different. So, I mean, I was away for 3 days there, and I had a pretty nice time. I was with our good friend Paulina from the blog, and she was over for the what we were hoping would be the treble party, and I was determined to make sure she had a nice time, and she cheered me up. She gave me a bit of perspective on the result, on the performance, and on the season. And so I can't be too downbeat tonight. I have no intention of being downbeat. Mistakes got made. I think the manager got the tactical decision wrong, especially when it was clear that we were not breaking them down as we should have. I think the substitutions were questionable. And rather than making like-for-like changes, I think he should have made a tactical switch. Other than that, I can't give the guy too much criticism because it's been an exceptional season. Exceptional. The European progress has capped what would have been a good season anyway, but since that's the barometer I think we want to be judged on, that takes it from being merely a good season into being a really successful campaign. And now we're preparing for the next one, and we're hoping that the next one's going to be better again. It's hard getting over any cup final defeat. But when it's a Scottish Cup final defeat, you have the whole summer to brood on it and obsess on it and feel bad about it. And being a treble attempt and coming up short hurts like hell. Of course it does. But you know what? It doesn't detract from the fact that we had a successful season. It does not detract from the fact that we are now unquestionably, even accounting for the lies they tell themselves, Scotland's most successful club. And the gap there is the one that we should be looking to open up next season and beyond. And as Paulina said to me the other day, there will be other trebles. I have no doubt that that is true. Eric, what do you think?
I would echo everything you're saying there, James. We didn't deserve to win on the day, because we weren't clinical. We didn't take our chances. There was some very poor decision-making when it came to some of the chances. And overall, I can't complain. I can complain about the OG. I will never understand why Kasper Schmeichel didn't try to palm that away with both hands. He seemed to nonchalantly try and palm it away with one hand, and that completely backfired on him. So I won't understand, but there is no point anymore in dwelling on the mistakes that were made on the day, the tactical errors, because the, you know, well, do you call it a tactical error to approach these games in the same fashion every time around? I suppose you have to at this point call it some sort of a tactical error, because we're not learning from it. And the thing is, the opposition managers clearly are learning from it, because they're setting up to counter it. And that's exactly what Jimmy Thielen did on Saturday. He countered everything we did. He set his side up to just camp in their box pretty much and try and just bat away everything that we kind of came at them with. So I don't begrudge Aberdeen at all. In fact, when I'm a big enough man that I can handle a loss like that, and I sat and I watched the celebrations from the Aberdeen fans. And you know something, as a football fan in general, I could see what it meant to them. I could see what it meant to the fans. I could see the outpouring of emotion and everything. And sometimes for us, because we're so used to winning all of the time, we don't get to experience that sort of outpouring of emotion when we win, because it's something that we at times maybe take for granted. They don't. Aberdeen don't take that for granted. And that was 35 years in the waiting for them since 1990, when they beat us in the same circumstances in a penalty shootout. But I guess the point I'm making is that I don't begrudge them, because there was part of me was happy to see the way that they celebrated and the way that they cherished that moment. And those fans will never forget that, and those players will never forget that. And as a football fan in general, you like to see that. You like to see the underdog. When it's at the underdog winning, when it's at the expense of your own club, obviously not as much. And also in the way that it happened in such a negative way. If you ask me, honestly, did they deserve it? They did not deserve it, because they didn't put anything into the game whatsoever. They contributed nothing to the game. Absolutely nothing. No, I mean, when I was looking at the, you know, the lineups before the game and kind of talking to my mates at the Celtic Supporters Club here over in Ireland that I'm part of, I was kind of saying that I felt Aberdeen would camp in the box from early on, but that they would have to come out and play at some point, it being a cup final. And they never did. They came out when Shaden Morrison came on. He got one cross in and he turned Jeffrey Schlupp inside out, and he got that cross in, and the rest is history. We know what happened after that. I wrote an article during the week there saying that when Kieran Tierney was watching that, he must have said that, Jesus, that wouldn't have happened on my watch. I don't think he'd have been turned inside out in that fashion if he was the guy who was you know, marking Morrison in that particular duel, you know. So it's a hard one to take. Obviously, it's a hard one to take. It's a hard one to swallow because of the way it happened and in the fashion it happened. But at the same time, I said when I did my kind of reflective article on Sunday afterward, I get that we can't win them all. You know, we're so spoiled for success. We're so spoiled with the success we've had. We feel that we should win them all. But it's not possible. Everybody says that we make troubles. You know, we've always, troubles have been too easy for Celtic. That's not the case. This season proved the troubles aren't easy. It's not easy to win a treble. You know, it's a very hard feat to manage to win a treble. It takes a hell of a lot of work and a hell of a lot of exertion, a hell of a lot of energy and a hell of a lot of focus, concentration, all those things to win something like that. And to be serial winners isn't easy either. But from my perspective, I do believe if Rio Tate, and I suppose there's something cynical in that, if you want to look at it, you know, Aberdeen cynically took him out in the league game. And had he been on the field that day, you know, he always has one or two killer balls in him. He has one or two balls that he can plant past the defence, and chances are we probably would have got a goal from one of those balls. And obviously the loss of Jota, Jota's trickery would have eventually reaped rewards. And dare I say it, if the board hadn't sold Kyogo Furuhashi, he flourishes in those kind of games, or he used to flourish in those kind of games. And it's quite clear now that that sale benefited only one party, and that was the board and the coffers of the club, because it didn't benefit Kyogo Furuhashi. It's been an absolute disaster for him, and we paid for it. You know, we always said last January that somewhere along the line it was going to bite us in the ass, and it did. It bit us in the ass last Saturday. It's that simple, because we didn't have that clinical level of finishing that we would have had if we had somebody like him in our ranks. And look, there's no point in skying or crying over spilt milk. There's no point now. It is what it is. It's done. It's history. And we got what we deserved. That's the reality. So I'm disappointed. Same as anybody else. But it's onwards and upwards. Let's build now and push on from what has been a successful season. There's no two ways about it. It has been a very successful season, and I suppose we have to look at the progress in Europe and what we achieved in Europe, and we have to ensure that we get past that hurdle that is the qualifying round, the third qualifying round, and ensure that we participate again in next season's Champions League. That's what we've got to do. We've got to look forward, and we've got a very high caliber player coming in Kieran Tierney, who's bringing vast experience to the left back position once again, and he's going to raise standards. And the board, and I'm sure Brendan Rodgers has already outlined to the board what he needs, they need to be looking to supplement the kind of quality that Kieran Tierney brings in. You know? So that's pretty much my take on the cup final. I think we need to consign it to the history books and leave it there.
At the end of the day, we have to. I mean, we have to be able to forward, not back. It's clear enough that we need to retool this team to play a different way. And I wonder if maybe that's what the manager's thinking about for the summer. How we implement plan B. There are certainly a couple of areas in the team where... I sort of have some sympathy. Right, the squad has been built to play a certain way and play a certain style. It only works when everyone's fit, though. take Jota out of the team, take Hatate out of the team, and we don't look the same. We don't have the same threat. We all talked about Hatate being one of the most frustrating players in the team. But we've seen what the team looks like when he isn't on. We've seen what the team looks like when we don't have that attacking talent. And it was not pretty to watch. So although an attacking midfielder wouldn't be a key priority most of the time, I think we need a solid backup. We need a solid backup for when Rio's not playing. And if Rio goes, we need two players in that position, which is sounds mental. At the same time, I don't think we have a classic defensive midfielder. There are rumours that we made a bid for one last week, the boy from France, who's young enough that he fits the profile, but has got enough experience that you kind of call him a project signing. But, I mean, there's a lot of work to be done. There's clearly a lot of work to be done. And you would hope that they're going to start doing it the second the window. In fact, they should be doing it right now, so that when the window opens, we just go straight in. But we'll see. We'll see.
We'll see, James. We'll see.
Our host of the most has returned.
So on 22nd of January, word went out that Kyogo Furuhashi was being sold to Rennes. Clearly, it was something that Celtic had been working on for some time. It didn't just happen straight after the final whistle against Young Boys Bern. So there was more than a week to prepare for that. There was more than a week after it. I dare say negotiations with Rennes were maybe took a week at least, probably a couple of weeks to take come to a conclusion. We got Jota back. That was a reasonable consolation from it. But having required a striker probably going into the January transfer window, having lost one, we won a watch with Bison Maeda through the middle, but it doesn't cover up for the fact that the manager was, the club was caught short and the manager had to carry that. So really, did some serious work take place in the last week in January to bring in a striker? Or was Michael Nicholson sitting with his feet up in the office, smoking cigars and patting himself on the back about how brilliant he is? So there appears to be no work done on a striker, just the usual Chris Garden rumours. There's nothing solid in that. It's the fourth consecutive transfer window that Chris Garden has been linked with Celtic. So I think the managers, the phrase he used was the squad was lighter rather than weaker after selling Kyogo and not getting a replacement. James, do you think there's a striker on the way? Is a striker a priority? Will we see a striker at Celtic at some point during June, ready to take part in pre-season training and in action for our first pre-season match away to Cork City?
I absolutely hope so. The Jota injury has radically altered the equation. Just as I don't know that we would have found a better guy through the middle than Maeda. And so I had my doubts that we were going to go and sign a starter. I don't think that we will easily find a better player than Maeda for the wide left position, which we now need to fill with Jota's injury, which puts us back on the hunt for a striker again. Yes, we need a striker. We badly need a striker. Everyone knows I'm an Adam Eda fan. Everyone knows I'm not going to criticise that boy too much. I think some of the stick he's had this season has been abysmal. He's ended the season well with a lot of goals to his name. He's only going to get better as time goes by. But we brought on a young kid to win a Scottish Cup. And that was the evidence of how foolhardy the whole Kyogo endeavour has turned out to be. And that was a needless self-inflicted wound. I still cannot fathom what Rodgers was doing signing off on that. Maybe he believed the people around him, if they told him that signing a striker would be a priority and that we would get the job done before the window shut. He ought never to have accepted that. And he ought never have allowed a star striker to leave before he had a replacement for him. And I trust that some people at the club are aware of the magnitude of that mistake. It's not the only thing that cost us at the weekend, but bringing on a kid when we should have had an experienced player to bring him off the bench says it all. It sums up the complete lack of forward thinking and forward planning. I wrote a piece today about forward planning, and Rodgers sounds an awful lot like a guy who wants to get busy straight away. He's talking about his own future, and now he's got to sit down with Desmond and get that resolved. There's talk is trying to get the three key players in the attack, Hatate, Maeda and Kun, signed up on new deals. I hope that is also a priority. That becomes easier if the manager commits his future, of course. If he commits his future, then he can go to these players and they can say, oh, I keep this team together for a few years and see what we can do. And that makes it an easier sell. But really, when the window opens, we need to be ready to move and sign three or four players straight away. It will be the first time that we've managed that in a long time. But the need for it is obvious. We kind of go into pre-season fixtures and in our pre-season, try to do everything at the last minute. And I know that we don't have our Champions League qualifier till August after the window is shut. But for God's sake, man, give the manager a fighting chance. Give the manager a whole summer, a whole pre-season. He worked with his new players. Give them time to meet their teammates, integrate into the team. If Rodgers wants to experiment with the system, let them be part of that. I mean, it's this signing them late in the day, it's a nonsense. Football people don't do this. This is what happens when you've got bean counters making these kinds of decisions. They don't know what they're doing. They may think that they're hot shit when it comes to signing commercial contracts, but they have no idea how to build and run a football team. That's not their area of expertise. And they should leave it to the people who are experts in it, and they should equip those people properly and in a timely manner. Rodgers won't stand for anything else. And if I've got one quibble with Rodgers wanting to sit down and get his future sorted out quickly over the summer, it's this. Rodgers should save that for as long as possible. He should save his, what we would call, political capital as long as he can. Because Rodgers needs to make sure that he gets what he wants first before he signs a new deal. Otherwise, I can see these people just dragging their feet again and getting him nothing. So he's got a decision to make. But a lot of people at Celtic Park have got decisions to make this summer. What level of risk is acceptable to these people? Because we don't know what's going to happen across the city, right? We don't know for sure what's going to happen over there, right? And I'm very open about this. It could well be that we have reckless maniacs with more money than sense over there, right? And that they just throw money at winning the league. We don't know whether Ancelotti really is just a daddy's boy or whether he's some kind of managerial guru. I have my doubts about that, but you just don't know. So there's a level of risk there. The level of risk we're going ill-prepared into a Champions League qualifier is several degrees of magnitude bigger than that. But you want to put it past these people to do it. And that's, to me, it's just crazy. I read an article on a Celtic site the other day that says anybody claiming that Rodgers hasn't been backed is wrong. Well, actually, the writer of that piece was wrong. Rodgers has never spent a penny of his transfer budget. Not a penny. If Rodgers is told at the start of the season, your transfer budget is £12 million, Rodgers has never touched that money. Never touched it. Two seasons in a row. Every penny that we've spent is money that had already came in through the door on transfer outgoings. So Rodgers hasn't been backed in the sense that these people mean. Rodgers hasn't been given additional funds to spend. Our transfer net spend since Rodgers came in is zero. And this is the summer in which that should change, in which Rodgers should get some proper money to spend. And he should be able to spend it quickly as circumstances allow. If the work for it isn't already done or isn't already being done, than a lot of people at Celtic Park are derelicting their duty, as far as I'm concerned. But then we know that already.
Well said, James. It's worth pointing out that Rodgers has spent the money that he's raised by selling players. So he was barely in the door and Jota was sold. He was getting the season underway and Carol Starfelt was sold. And that was after Aaron Moy had retired. And then we know Matt O'Reilly financed a few deals in, last season in August, the final week, the busiest week of the year. But an interesting take there about Rodgers being let down by the board with regards to the signing a striker. But Eric, do you think the board owe it to Brendan Rodgers to get things done this month? I think we do. We're probably all in agreement the board do owe it to Brendan Rodgers, but will they make it up to Brendan Rodgers? Will they get things done quickly during June to make up for the mistakes they made over Kyogo and make a real play to ensure that Brendan Rodgers remains at Celtic manager and gets down to serious negotiations, even if it's only to take up a one-year rolling deal rather than have a circus through this year where every passing week, every passing game is getting closer to the end of his contract? So do you think the Celtic board will deliver for Brendan Rodgers in a bid to get him to stay on?
Well, you said, do I think that they're going to make it up to him for what they did in January with Kyogo for Rashi? The board doesn't feel that they did anything wrong there. They banked 10 million quid for a 30-year-old. So as far as they're concerned, in their eyes, they did a great job. Are they looking at it from the perspective that Brendan Rodgers met the KPIs that were set for him? Was a treble the KPI that was set for him and progress in Europe? We don't know that because we never know what the plan is for the club. So do I honestly think they're going to make it up to him? I mean, if we're looking at their track record, no, I don't think they're going to make it up for him or up to him. I am in the mindset that I'm going to see nothing different to what I've seen transfer window after transfer window after transfer window this time around until I see something different. So, and I, because I'm so used to accepting the way things operate, until I see something different, then I just accept the status quo. I accept it's going to be the same. But in terms of, like, it's already in the papers this evening that the money or the windfall that we're going to get from the transfer of Jeremy Frimpong to Liverpool, 6 million quid that we possibly bank on that, will go on Balikwasha or whatever this guy's name is, you know, for the wing. So, like, we're already, the papers are already talking about the fact that we're going to be using incomings to, our incoming transfer money to supplement purchases of players, which goes back to what James has said earlier on, that, you know, the net spend is zero. And that's got to change. And, I mean, if we're looking at what we require, and I said this earlier on, you know, to James, that we've got Kieran Tierney coming in. We've got a very high caliber level of player coming in, a guy who has vast experience after his six-odd years at Arsenal. And he's going to expect, you know, he's going to be operating at a very high level. But not only that, he's going to expect that the players around him will supplement that kind of level. So I'm sure Brendan Rodgers is aware of that, and he's thinking along the lines of bringing in players of that caliber or that kind of level. And if you want to bring in players of that kind of caliber and that kind of level, then you're going to have to spend. So then you've got to ask yourself the question, is the big worry there that they're going to accept a big bid for Daisy Maeda, Rio Hatate, or is, you know, are they going to sanction the big boys that Brendan Rodgers wants on the basis that we get one big sale? Or can we just set that aside? And like James said a few months ago when he wrote an article, that we need to actually just hold the squad together this summer and then build it and spend money to build it. But do I have faith in the board doing that? I don't. And I wrote an article the other day there, you know, about Kieran Tierney, when I said that when he left the club in the summer transfer window of 2019, he has never been adequately replaced. So effectively, Kieran Tierney has come back 6 years later and replaced himself. You know, so, because if you look at who was in there in between, you have Greg Taylor, you have Bolly Bolingoli, you have Diego Laxalt, you have who else was it? There was Alejandro Bernabei. And none of them have been a success, bar a mild success has been Greg Taylor. Greg Taylor, as we've always said, he's a good SPFL standard player. And he did a good job. He played the inverted role very good under Ange Postecoglou. And he's been a very good servant to the club. And there's no two ways about that. You can't deny that. But he is not going to play a second fiddle to Kieran Tierney. I'm sure he has no interest in doing that. And if, as has been mooted in the press recently, you know that the club is in talks with Geoffrey Schlupp about signing on a permanent basis, then Geoffrey Schlupp is going to be the backup to Kieran Tierney. So that's the reality there. But James alluded to a midfielder earlier on as well, getting in, you know, this hard man midfielder that we need, young, hard man, aggressive. You know, it's been 2021 since Scott Brown left the club. So we're having a conversation about jokingly saying that Kieran Tierney has replaced himself at the left-back position, and we still haven't brought in that solid midfielder that we require, that hard man that we require in midfield since Scott Brown has left. We're still talking about that. When Oliver Abelgaard came in, everybody was saying that he was the guy who was going to fit that role. He was a complete flop, never achieved anything at the club. And it just seems to me that when we let these guys go, these guys who have been mainstays in the team, like Tierney and Scott Brown were, we seem incapable of replacing them. And that's what we've got to look at this transfer window. We have got to find the guys. We've got to find that midfielder. We've got to find another winger. And we've got to find a striker. And the simple fact is, Johnny Kenny's not going to cut it. Johnny Kenny will probably develop over time. Johnny Kenny will probably develop into a decent striker. The fact of the matter is Brendan Rodgers believes in the guy. He believes he's good. But, like, he's not going to. You'll see the proper Johnny Kenny probably 2 seasons from now. You know, when he's bedded in properly into the system and he understands how things work, and whether Brendan Rodgers is going to be here in 2 or 3 seasons, God only knows. But he's not ready now. He's young. He's coming from League of Ireland level. And this is a massive step up for him. And look, Rodgers sees something in him, but it's going to be a while before we see anything. So he's not the answer. We need that striker. I don't want to hear any bollocks about, you know, somebody like that we've had already, like Kyogo Furuhashi coming back, you know, because that's been rumoured in the papers as well. We need to look forward. We need to stop focusing on players that we had already and talking about players that have been at the club already and move on and bring in new, fresh, young blood that will supplement the likes of Kieran Tierney, and they're at the level of the likes of Kieran Tierney. It's always that kind of conversation that we've had where could the club spend 6 to 7 million on 4 decent players instead of, you know, spending like they did 2 seasons ago, 20 million on 10 crap players, none of which are going to be at the club, and, you know, by the end of the summer window. Because I personally don't believe that Yang, I finally just thrown the book at Yang and said, forget him after his performance last Saturday. He showed he's not capable of doing a job in that position. And he's the last vestiges along with Mike Naraki, isn't it? There's nobody else other than Palma, if Palma comes back from his loan. And who out of that window 2 years ago was even mildly successful? And you would say Lewis Palma, maybe. He was probably the best of a bad lot. So, to my mind, back to your original question, Joe, because I've rambled a lot. Do I have faith in the board repaying Brendan Rodgers for selling Kyogo last January? No, I don't. I don't. And that's because of previous. That's because of what I'm used to seeing. And Silent Mike is the guy who's in charge of all this. Silent being the operative word. He doesn't speak. He doesn't tell us anything. We have no. He doesn't tell us what the club's plan is, if there is even a plan. So, I mean, how can we have any sort of insight into what the plan actually is or what's happening? The only person, as you said, is it they're putting all the onus on Brendan Rodgers, because Brendan Rodgers is probably the only guy who is going to speak. But he's always vocalized what he's wanted. Have they delivered him what he wanted? They haven't, because they clearly didn't deliver what he wanted in the last transfer window, and he wanted a bloody striker. And we're still talking about Chris Garden, 4 windows. And David Strelich, we'll be talking about him again in this window. Forget about David Strelich and forget about Matthias Knistgarden. Let's look at different options. And I'm sure Brendan Rodgers has a shortlist. It would be You know, remiss of him not to have a shortlist for the board. But whether the board will deliver that shortlist now, that remains to be seen. Whether it's going to be lastminute.com and grandstanding and us paying ridiculous money and breaking our transfer record when there's no need to break it. You know, we just got to go on past their past record. And their past record doesn't shower them in glory. It doesn't. So, no, I've no faith in them delivering what we want, unless that changes.
Fair comment, Eric. There's absolutely no evidence to suspect that they're going to do anything in any way differently. It's always wait, sell players before they buy players. And then, as we've known from our previous Champions League qualifiers, let's wait to see if we get through the Champions League qualifier before we sign anyone. It's a very dangerous strategy, if you can call it a strategy. The Europa League brings in money, the Champions League brings in money, and there doesn't seem to be any great plans in place at Celtic, what they're going to do with this money, what direction they're going in. It's just shrug their shoulders, see what direction things move in, and as long as they're above the other lot from Glasgow, then most folk are quite happy. But a couple of small points there. I think any talk about a new deal for Schlupp has just been diplomatic. I don't think there's any prospect whatsoever. He's been at Palace for 6-7 years. He'll be well settled in London. He'll get other offers from London. And coming up to Celtic is back up to Kieran Tierney. Won't particularly appeal. And the sort of wages that he'll be looking for. He'll be taking a big hit on his reported 60 grand a week at Crystal Palace. But I suspect he'll be looking for at least 20 grand somewhere, arriving as a free agent, and that's not really going to be in Celtic's ballpark. He'll be looking for somebody younger and emerging, but they've had time to do that, and there's no real sign of anyone. On Johnny Kenny, I think it's pretty well known that St Mirren and Doncaster Rovers were keen on getting Johnny Kenny in January, and Celtic were equally keen for him to go out and loan to those places. So it wasn't a great show of faith by Brendan Rodgers by giving him games and retaining him. It was the hand that came to him. So again, there's no great plan. And the best thing for Johnny Kenny's career would be to go out anywhere next season in Scotland or England and get one full season under his belt rather than being the third choice at Celtic. Maybe picking up 6 or 7 games and going backwards. He had a great spell at Shamrock Rovers. He needs to kick on from that. So I don't think there's any plan there. So we've got Adam Ida and Dyson Maeda as a winger stroke striker. There's certainly a need for at least one striker coming in. On the transfer window, it does open up. I think it's maybe the 8th of June or the 10th of June. But you can sign a football player any day of the week. You can sign a player any time you like. The registration period opens on the 10th of June, the 12th of June, the 15th of June. But you can be in contact talks with them now. They're discussing deals. You can get deals done. The only thing is you can't register it with the SFA until that certain date. But there is no excuse for not getting the work done. The work should be getting done. It should be well underway. And we all want to see players coming in during June, but there's not too much optimism around in this pod that things are going to happen. But James, turning back to you, I can see a few puzzled looks, but the biggest question, and the question that's going to dominate everything, is Brendan Rodgers and his contract. There's a Sky Sports interview released yesterday. It was very brief, but there was some interesting comments from him there. He was giving no commitment whatsoever. There'll be talks maybe, doesn't say when. Talks with Dermot and the board, still not mentioning the CEO. What's your reading? What's your expectation? Do you think Brendan Rodgers is going to say, yep, fair enough, lads, I trust you. I'm signing up for this new deal. Or is he going to say, prove it to me? You told me about the great things when I came back in 2023 and you presented me with 9 dodgy signings and none of them came to any use. We get 2 or 3 months out of Louis Palma. We've had Yang coming on. Yang's basically fourth choice winger, and he's had 2 years at Celtic. Virgil van Dijk and Victor Wanyama had two fantastic years at Celtic and moved on. That's the highest benchmark, but Yang's basically made very little impression. So what's your reading of the Brendan Rodgers situation? You mentioned earlier he's going to hold back on it. Do you think he waits to see the proof of the pudding? He waits to see the signings before he makes any decisions? So it's a bit chicken or egg. What direction do you see June going in terms of these contract talks and a likely outcome?
Well, I think the contract talks are very important to where we're going to be. If we can get Rodgers and those three key players signed up, that's the foundation stone for the rest of the summer. The one worry is now, I mean, obviously you're right about the chicken and egg scenario, right? The concern is that ideally, if you're going to get the players to stay, you want a commitment for the manager first, because that makes it easier to sell the players on the idea that there's a strategy unfolding and it's not just being cobbled together, only to unravel at the end of the season when he leaves. The concern is that Rodgers might not want to commit straight away. That Rodgers might want to see what kind of hand the board deals him first. Now, he can make private overtures to the players and tell them that he expects to stay and he wants them to stay, and for the good of the club, they should stay, and good of their own careers, they should stay, and they might sign deals anyway. But Rodgers may hold off till he sees what kind of backing he gets. And that's usually where the trouble starts. Because, again, you're looking at the chicken and egg scenario. Do the board look at the situation and say, well, we might let this guy spend £25 million and then he might just walk at the end of the season. And then we've got a whole other manager who's got to come in and he might want to rebuild. And there is no right or wrong here in terms of that. The bottom line is, though, that they're all just going to have to trust each other and they're all just going to have to do the best thing for the club. I know that is where the difficulty lies, right? Because I think there are people on our board who genuinely think that they are the club now, that they represent the best interest of the club, and that they're always right. And that's a really big stumbling block for Rodgers to get over. That's a really big obstacle that he has been banging his head against for 2 years. Joe, you're right. It's not a coincidence that he keeps talking about the major shareholder rather than the chief executive. He hardly mentions chief executive. I can't remember the last time he mentioned Nicholson except in the context of the whole board. Whenever he talks about player contracts, whenever he talks about signings, whenever he talks about his own situation, he's always talking about Desmond. So he knows who his principal backer is, and he knows that sometimes in order to get what he wants, he's going to have to go around these people. How much longer is that tenable? I mean, sooner or later, whatever egos are clashing in there, they have to put the club first, and they have to think about what the best thing for the club is in the short to medium term as well as in the long term. And in the short to medium term, that means that we've got to qualify for the Champions League group stages again and put that big bucket of money in the bank, if that indeed is what they want to do it. But to not have it is to lose out on that because we don't push the boat out far enough. There's no way that the manager will stay under those circumstances, whether he signs a new deal or not. Rodgers will be looking for the exit at the end of next season, whether he's got a new deal or not, if that happens. So the frustrating thing is that you just don't know with these people, or rather you do know, because we've seen it all before. But you somehow always manage to convince yourself that mistakes have been made and they must see that mistakes have been made and that lessons must have been learned and they must recognise where they went wrong and they must... That's where the difficulty is, because sometimes I don't think that these people think they get anything wrong. They see there's money in the bank, they see the stands are full, season tickets have been sold, the team is successful. So how can they be wrong about anything? But there are signs of decline and there are signs of decay if you're looking for them. And the fact that our B team's going to spend another season in the lower league is just one of them. There are plenty of them if you're willing to look. But in terms of looking at the trophy count and the money in the bank and the value of the squad, I can imagine that these people don't think they're doing very much right. And so the idea that they should change course probably seems a bit stupid to them. Even though we can clearly see that mistakes are getting made as they were in January and that we've paid for that to a certain extent at the weekend, I'm not convinced these people see it. But Rodgers is smart enough to know who he can trust and who his principal supporters are. And he's got no difficulty and no, he feels no compunction about going around these people, if that's what it takes. And maybe that is what it takes. It's a difficult one. This summer could go either way. I'm prepared for a bit of a roller coaster, to be honest with you.
It's not a healthy situation when the manager doesn't appear to have too much support internally, when he's always got to reference Dermot Desmond. But on that, there was an interesting development just before Christmas. After winning the League Cup on penalties, December the 15th, Celtic's next match was away to Dundee United. And in the pre-match press conference, the usual questions, and Rodgers brought up the fact that the day after the League Cup final, he'd went over to Dublin to meet Dermot Desmond. On the flight with him to Dublin were Michael and Chris, that's Michael Nicholson and Chris Mackay. So the two folk you'd imagine are at the front end of transfer activity. And coming just a week before Christmas, a couple of days before Christmas, 10 days or so before the transfer window opened, that seemed very, that seemed like great news. That seems as if things were happening. It was a forward plan. So, Eric, what do you suspect happened during those conversations between the League Cup final win and a nothing each draw away to Dundee United, the opening of the January transfer window? No one concepts a successful transfer window. The Tierney deal was pretty well signposted. Well done getting the guy back. But it's not exactly an incredible scoop. All the conditions were there for Tierney. If they'd signed someone else from Arsenal or someone from Manchester City, that would be something that you'd sit up and take notice of. But there was always a prospect of Tierney coming back. So where do you think the relationship is, Eric, between Brendan Rodgers, Dermot Desmond, and what's actually going on? Are people inside the club aware of ambition, or are they just happy to be a few points ahead of their friends at Ibrox? And if it's Thursday nights in the Europa League, fair enough. We can roll out the Europa League magic, repeat the road to Seville, and more than enough punters will buy the ticket. So where is the relationship between the manager, the largest individual shareholder, and the people that are apparently hands-on at the club, Michael Nicholson and Chris Mackay?
Well, if you brought up the point earlier on there about the this jolly that they had to Dublin in December, and we talked about that back on the podcast at that time, and I asked you if you felt there was anything to take from it, and you even said at that time that you didn't see much. You know, it didn't count for anything really, and it was probably just a jolly over to see Dermot Desmond have a few beers and a meal and whatever. And I'm sure Brendan Rodgers shot the breeze with him and told him what he wanted in terms of transfers, and that was about the size of it, because clearly nothing serious happened in that particular meeting because of the fact the January transfer window turned out to be an absolute shambles. So if you're asking me about the relationship between Brendan Rodgers and the board and Dermot Desmond, it's sort of, how could I put it in context? It's like if Brendan wants something and he wants it from the board and he's not getting the kind of response that he's looking for, he then says to the guys, well, if you're not going to respond to me, I'll go to Dermot. And then he goes to Dermot. He tells Dermot what he wants. Dermot goes back to the guys and he says, Brendan is looking for such and such. Give Brendan what he's looking for. But I think the problem is, and where the problem lies, is with Michael Nicholson. Michael Nicholson is clearly not a communicator. We know he's not a communicator because we call him Silent Mike. Okay? So we know he's not good at communication, right? And he clearly proved in the summer transfer window of 2024 he was not good at communication because he ended up costing the club way more money for Adam Ida and way more money for Arnie Engels than we should have paid. So his negotiation skills have to be a hell of a lot better. And I personally don't think that Brendan Rodgers, as the manager of Celtic at the moment, trusts Michael Nicholson's negotiation skills. And this is the fear going into this transfer window. Are we going to end up paying over the odds for players that we need? Because you're going to, and at the risk of repeating myself, you're going to go back to the same scenario as we went back to last summer, where clubs are going to start realizing Celtic have loads of money. And if we just play hardball with them, they'll eventually pay us what we want because we know they've got the dosh. And then you see you've the flip side of that where Michael Nicholson goes, well, that player's worth $6 million, so we'll offer $3.5 million for him. You know, and then the other club just pisses themselves laughing and it all just gets farcical. And that's exactly what happened last summer. And you're wondering, are you going to see more of the same this summer? I have a nasty sneaking suspicion that, you know, this transfer window this summer could be a repeat of 2018. And I don't want to be a doom and gloom merchant, but this is the exact point or juncture where it all went south with Brendan Rodgers the first time around. And I'm only saying that because I'm going back to what you said earlier on when you said, is it a case of showing me the money with Brendan Rodgers and a case of showing me the money with the board? You know, I mean, to use the slang. But what I'm saying, I guess, is Brendan Rodgers wants to say to them, show me the faith you have in what I want to do with the club by getting me the players that I want. And then I'll commit. And then the board are going to say, well, you give us your commitment and we might give you what you want. And never the twain shall meet. And there'll be an impasse. They won't give him the players and he won't commit. And that's the worst case scenario in this transfer window. That's the biggest thing that we have to worry about. What we do require is joined up thinking. And joined up thinking means that they're all on the same page. They're all thinking that we need to do this as a joint entity to make this summer transfer window work, to make the building of the squad work. Yes, Brendan, we'll get the players that you require. Yes, Brendan, we'll sit down and negotiate a contract with you in good faith. And then everything's hunky-dory, happy-go-lucky. It's all, you know, Bob's your uncle, Fanny's your aunt, and everybody's happy. But this is the Celtic board we're talking about. This is Silent Mike we're talking about. These are guys who clearly have had previous for not being able to do these kind of things. So what makes us think that that's going to change this summer? James? Joe? What makes it...
I want to come in with some housekeeping, some podcast stuff. So we've got lots of comments coming through tonight. I saw somebody supporting the Celtic board telling us all how lucky we are and how wonderful they are. And all the problems are down to Brendan Rodgers. Good luck. We're back to CQN. Best wishes to all the lads over there. The comments are great. It's really appreciated. And to help grow and develop the blog, please subscribe. Please like, please share. And it's great having interaction. It's great having folk on. But after the live show, once it's finished, if you go into YouTube and put a comment or two on there, give it a thumbs up, give it a like. That builds a little bit of momentum. And we'll be back for you every week through the summer. But as Eric was talking there, I remembered a Celtic employee. It's a sort of job that's really needed because there's clearly an impasse. There's clearly difference of opinion between the board and the manager. So I think it's about October time, we appointed a guy called Head of Football Operations. We have heard absolutely nothing from him since. He seemed to be quite a chatty, sociable guy. He seemed to have a very strong opinion of himself. He's a former Exeter United manager. He's been at the coalface in football for a long, long time. His name's Paul Tidsdale. You'll see very, very little about him. I mean, bizarrely, I remember last summer during Euro 2024, he was interviewed by TalkSport because it's something to do with the Aston Villa guy, Watkins, I think, that scored a goal for England. He'd been involved with him at Exeter. And he just casually dropped into the conversation that he hadn't watched the match because he was watching Queen's Park against Celtic at Lesser Hampden, or the City Stadium, which it's possibly called, Willie Hockett. So, James, what is the role of Paul Tidsdale over the next month? I know you've got very little to go on, but what would you imagine his job is? Surely he springs into action, all the work he's been doing over the last couple of months. The next 2 months, June and July, we've got to see the fruits of Paul Tidsdale. Some joined up thinking, some football strategy, some transfers, bringing ready-made first-team players in and hopefully getting rid of some of the duds lumbered on us by Mark Lowell. What's the role of Paul Tidsdale, James?
Well, I mean, his first role should be get in front of the media and give a full interview on what the hell he does and what the hell he's been doing. You know, I can't remember the last time Brendan Rodgers mentioned a mirror, which is a strange thing. If he's playing such a pivotal role, he's the guy Rodgers should be talking about all the time. They should be the dream team partnership that's looking to restructure the squad. And I never hear his name getting mentioned by Rodgers. And we've certainly not heard a single word out of him since his great unveiling. I'll tell you one thing that would be a game changer. If him and Rodgers took full control of the football operation, if the head of football operations was broken off from the rest of the club, in a sense, and given a budget to work with every single year, and told any additional money that you raise is yours to spend as you see fit, but here is your operating budget for the next 12 months, go out and do with it whatever you will, that would be a game changer. That would get the bean counters out of the process completely, and the manager would know what his transfer budget is, and he would know that any further money that he raises, he gets to keep and gets to spend. And that's how it should work. The football guys should be running the football department. And I would welcome hearing from this guy and finding out what it is he actually does and what his plans actually are. And whether he gets on well with Rodgers and whether he works with Rodgers and how that relationship actually takes effect and what the benefits have been so far, because we haven't seen very much. I'll tell you one other thing that's like, I'll talk for a second about the rinse and repeat Kvistgaarden rumour first, because again, you're right, this is what this will be window number 5 in which we've been linked with this guy, right? It seems pretty clear that there is an interest. It seems pretty clear we've expressed that interest and we've made offers. Those offers haven't come up to snuff, right? But where Brøndby are not playing their hand very well is that we seem to be the only club that genuinely is interested. There's been talk about Germany, there's been talk about England, but no bids appear to materialise from those places. And if they're holding it for too much money, they risk not getting any kind of good deal for them at all. This might be the window in which to do it, because I think they may have realised that they've overplayed their hand talking about crazy figures like 12 and 14 million pounds and all that stuff. I don't think they're going to get that. They were never going to get that. So if he's available at a realistic price, this should be the window in which it gets done, if it's going to get done. And if it doesn't get done in this window, we should never hear about it again, ever. But I have a concern about how the board might see things. We know that there was an incident at Ibrox where some of the board members felt like they could slag the manager in front of the media, and we know that because a couple of media outlets talked about it and ran stories about it. Very low-key stuff. But we know that it happened. We know that they were questioning why Rodgers had spent all that money on certain players in the summer only to leave those guys on the bench. As if it was their right to do that. As if it was their right to make that criticism. But I would imagine that some of them are thinking along the same lines after Saturday, when Trusty doesn't even get off the bench, and when in the middle of the second half, where we're obviously not playing well, he takes off the two other big money signings. And I hope to God that Rodgers hasn't screwed himself with that move, because it would be just like these people to watch that and think, well, you know what? Why should we give this guy more money to spend when he hasn't got the best out of the money that we've already given him? And as I say, I personally don't think they have the right to make judgments on how Rodgers utilises the squad. But they do think they've got that right, and they might just decide that they're not seeing enough proof that Rodgers is getting value for money right now, and that Rodgers might need babysitting a wee bit in this transfer window, and that really does worry me a lot.
Yep, fair enough. I mean, the sniping against Adam Ida, Arne Engels is absolutely outrageous, and I'll add Austin Trusty onto that. Those three guys all had a fairly significant role in Celtic's Champions League progress. If it wasn't for them, there would have been no Bayern Munich tie. There would be no Bayern Munich payday. They wouldn't have been able to sell tickets at £46 and pat themselves on the back and all the rest of it. So those three guys played a massive part in that. They played a hell of a lot more part in it than the duds signed by Matt Lowell as Brendan Rodgers' welcome return. I mean, it's a struggle for most folk to name them. I'll try it. Yang and Kwon, Lager, Bielke and Naroki, Home, the three wingers, Telio and Palma. Those signings were utterly horrendous, contributed nothing, all on 4 and 5 year contracts, draining the payroll. So if anyone wants to start sniping about Engels and Ida and Trusty, have a look at those guys. So I'm going to give the last word to Eric. He can maybe give us his thoughts on Paul Tidsdale and anything else. But just a reminder, all three of us, independent blog sites, Read Celtic, Video Celts and the Celtic blog. We'll be producing content every day of the week, every month of the year. We'll be going all through May, June, July, and we'll have the website, we'll have the podcast on once a week. So, Eric, I'll let you round up. There's been a typically miserable response tonight. Lots of pessimism or realism, as many of us would put it. What's your thoughts on Paul Tisdale? And can you sign us off tonight on a positive note? Over to you, Eric.
Football doctor, right? How is he? I think since he's come to Celtic Park, he's just become a football nurse because he doesn't. I mean, what can I say about the guy? I've seen nothing in the media about him. I've seen nothing from Brendan Rodgers about him. I don't know what his role is and what he's doing in the background. But I agree with what James is saying. We need to, if this guy is in a serious role at the club and he's working hand in hand with Brendan Rodgers, then the board need to hand over the football operation to those guys and the signing of players to those guys. And they need to be able to just communicate with the board and say, this is what we require. This is what we need. This is the valuation. We need to meet the valuation if we want any hope of signing the player, and just push it forward that way. But it's like somebody in the comments made a point there. What about geriatric David Pleat? I mean, what was that guy brought in for? He's a scout. What has he scouted? What has he presented to the board? Or what has he presented to the management? So, look, it's... I don't know. We've always talked for a long time, and I even remember James doing it years ago in his blogs, you know, about there being a separate footballing operation to the board. And all of that probably went back to the time when we had the de facto director of football, and we really wanted him separate from the football operation because of his meddling at that time. And that hasn't changed. I suppose, like, the de facto director of football actually did try to bring players in, and he did sometimes communicate, whereas the other guy, just Simon Mike, doesn't communicate at all. So we don't know where we stand with him. But I can't say much about Paul Tisdale because I don't know anything about Paul Tisdale. That's the reality. I really don't know anything about the guy. I don't know what he's contributing to Celtic. I don't know what he's done since he came here to the club. So until such time as maybe he's the key to this summer being different. Who knows? So I'll try and be positive on that note. And I'll say maybe this is the guy who's going to make it different this summer for everybody. You know? And then another positive, you talked earlier on there about the bashing of Adam Ida and the bashing of Arne Engels. And I did a piece the other evening there where Arne Engels, Adam Ida, and a lot of people were complaining about Nicholas Kuhn as well. These guys, between the three of them, contributed 51 goals to our season. And you have people saying these guys were, you know, these guys had a poor season. They were a failure. Arne Engels scored 10 goals. He stepped up and took penalties when it was required and missed one. And he had 13 assists. Nicholas Kuhn had 21 goals and 18 assists. And Adam Ida had 20 goals. And how you can say that these guys, for the cost that I know Kuhn is separate and he costs us 3.75 million, but Engels and Ida, who, to be fair, both didn't get pre-seasons. Engels was thrown in at the deep end. And look at the season that he had. In mid-season there, he got a couple of Man of the Match awards. The thing is, all of our guys were rock solid in the early to mid part of the season. It was when the pressure was off and when the league was won that we saw things fall away. But you cannot say the three guys who contributed 51 goals and a plethora of assists had a poor season. That's a great return for debut seasons, especially for Adam Ida and for Arne Engels. So on a positive note, I think those guys had a great first season for the club. And I think there's going to be a hell of a lot more to come from them. And I'm putting this out there now, I believe that Arne Engels will be the guy who breaks the transfer record, you know, in terms of the biggest sale out of Scotland.
Absolutely.
You know, well, that's my belief.
We'll leave it in that half full note.
Can I add one thing before the end?
Yeah, on you go, James.
Neil Lennon just signed a 2-year deal with Dunfermline, so congratulations to Neil on getting back into management. And I'm particularly pleased about it because one of my exes is a Dunfermline fan and one of those people who had an irrational Ibrox-like hatred for Lennon for years and years and years. And I hope she's still taking the kids to see them now that she's got her man in the dugout. I know I shouldn't feel spiteful towards my ex, but I kind of do a wee bit.
Right, on that, it's over to Paul Tisdale, and we'll be celebrating his successes this time next week. Cheers.
See you later, guys. Have a good one.